Tracking, folks. I'm Jared Dubin, and this is Probatimus. We have a special surprise Tuesday edition of the podcast because when two of the three or four best teams in the league play on national TV on a Monday night, we're going to do a podcast the next day. We got Seth Partnow on the line once again to talk about Cavs against the Warriors, maybe a little bit of Clippers Rockets, and some All-Star stuff. Seth, what's up, man?
Two of the best. No, I'm kidding. I'm not gonna fire that take. It's going well. It was two of the best, you know, three or four teams, and I guess there are two of the best teams, really, and those weren't the ones that played last night.
Yeah, the Cavs that played last night did not look like one of the best three or four teams in the league. You know, on balance,
well, they did. It's just that's how much right now San Antonio and Golden State are better than everybody else.
I think, you know, the main thing that I think I want to talk about first is, can we put to rest now this idea that if the Cavs just had Love and Kyrie healthy for the finals, it would have been an automatic win, which is basically how Cavs fans have been acting since that finals started. Like, oh, we played really good defense on them, now just add Love and Kyrie and it's over. Like, absolutely fucking not, okay?
You know, as at least one of those players seems to impact their defense against Golden State, I'll say that. I'm studiously going to refuse to take a Kevin Love victory lap, but because I think that he's being, I don't want to say hung out to dry a little bit, but he is not necessarily being put in positions to best succeed against the Warriors, and that's been true in both games this season, I think.
Well, you know, him guarding Draymond Green is not an ideal situation for anybody. Zach Lowe said on Twitter last night, like, why don't they just put him on Harrison Barnes? But then he also, I think in either the same tweet or the next tweet, you know, the Warriors have seen that move before, and if you put Kevin Love on Barnes, they'll just run pick and roll with Barnes, you know? The Warriors relentlessly attacked him in pick and rolls, and then when they played the Spurs, we talked about it last week, they relentlessly attacked him in pick and rolls too. You know, it either comes to a point where you gotta take him off the floor, change your pick and roll coverages, or figure out a way that he's not gonna be guarding the guy that's doing the screening no matter what, and I just don't know that you can do that.
So I have 3 points here. First, if Golden State wants to run their offense so that Harrison Barnes making plays from, you know, the top of the key is how they're gonna win. You know, he can do that. He's a good player. That's on the lower end of the danger scale when facing Golden State. So if, well, they'll just put Barnes as the screener, well, he's not as good a screener, he's not as good a role man, he's not as good a playmaker in that spot. So that's, you know, relatively speaking, that's advantage Cavs if Golden State decides they want to, you know, it's a little bit like the, well, we've got a size mismatch, let's post this guy who never posts up. Let's post him up. Maybe it'll work, but it's like you're getting outside of yourself a little bit.
Yeah, so that's a little bit. But point number one, you know, that usually does work for them. And then also, like, let's say they just keep running it with Draymond. Now all of a sudden, Kevin Love is the guy protecting the rim, and he also has to get back out to Barnes in the corner. I mean, that might be even worse.
Then that almost works better because then he's the guy on the corner, and he won't rotate off the corner like they're doing way too much anyway. So maybe his lack of rotation will actually help because he'll be guarding the corner shooter, which for some reason they, over and over last night, and I think we'll get to this, they kind of had hopeless help coming from the, like, you're never going to get there, and now you're in no man's land, and your guy just shot an open three.
You have to get, like, if you're going to send that help, you have to get there so that the guy is there when Draymond catches the ball off the screen. Otherwise, it's useless.
So that's point number two. Is there, and I tweeted this last night, is the front and back of their pick and roll coverage were not congruent last night. So I actually think if they are willing to stomach some degree of damage, like that kind of high hedge semi blitz they're doing with Love isn't ideal because, you know, he's not you're asking him to make plays with his lateral quickness, and that's not, you know, his best skill. But they saw this a little bit in the first games of the finals. If you can commit to, all right, we're going to make Draymond Green score from that spot, either hit you know, 18-foot jump shots or finish through verticality at the rim, we're going to live with that.
And that's what they did.
We're not going to help up off the dunker spot. We're not going to help in off the corner spot. We're going to make that work. Then maybe it can work. But then they were trapping. He'd get the ball in the pocket. And then they scramble to rotate to him, and he would, since he's, you know, the best passing forward in the league right now by some margin, he's finding guys and just carving them apart. So right. Either they have to play the top softer or the back in a way that isn't giving up dunks and three-pointers every time.
Right. And that strategy that you mentioned is what they did for the first three games of the finals, where, you know, he would catch that ball at 18 feet or whatever it was, and Mozgov would just stand directly at the rim, and Draymond would either hesitate, and I think he took, like, more mid-range shots off the catch on pick and roll in those first three games of the finals than he did all year, or he would try to go directly at Mozgov at the rim and finish right over him, and Mozgov's just standing there, and he got blocked, like, 17 million times. He threw a bunch of lobs out of bounds because Mozgov wasn't moving. He wasn't hitting that corner shooter. What you want to do is turn Draymond, rather than into a passer and a playmaker, into a guy that has to finish over size or take a mid-range jumper, which, you know, are the two things that he doesn't necessarily want to do when he gets the ball there. The first three games of the finals, they did that well. Then David Lee came in and showed how you can actually make a play out of that, and then Draymond wound up doing the same thing over the last few games, particularly when they went small, because, you know, the guys in those positions weren't as used to defending those positions, and it worked out extremely well for them. This season, he's found that balance between, you know, looking for his shot and making the play even better than he did over those last few games of the finals. And, you know, in the two games against Cleveland, there have been times where Mozgov has found that right balance, where he's just planted his ass right in front of the basket, and there have been times where he's stepped up and they've gotten alley-oops to Bogut or Azili, or the corner guy has come in way too far and they've gotten Barnes or Iguodala in the corner. For the most part, they haven't found that right balance to defend them the way they did in those first few games of the finals.
And really the one that's the play that is that they were making over and over again last night, which was just annoying, was the guy from the opposite side corner kind of crashing down on it. And that's, you're never going to get there. You're just too far to go to affect a play at the rim. And you're just, if you get anywhere near, then all of a sudden there's a guy standing in the corner with eight, you know, 12 feet of space. And that's a, you know, for an average NBA shooter, that's a 40-something percent shot. For somebody on Golden State this year, that's a, you know, I don't want to say it's a 50% shot, but it's a high 40 shot. It's, you know, in effective terms, it's giving up a semi-contested layup every time down the floor. And that's I think Haralabas tweeted this out after the game or late in the game. It's like they were averaging like 1.5 points per possession, which means that, you know, it's the equivalent of them getting an open corner three every time on the floor. But the third point I wanted to make about Love is maybe just don't play a pick and roll coverage that requires him to, you know, jump all the way out to 30 feet from the basket.
The problem is when you're guarding a Steph pick and roll, it requires everybody to jump 30 feet out from the basket.
You know, can you, I don't know if you can show without it turning into this, like, extended double team.
Yeah, but like, if you just show, I mean, it's like a free three.
I think you can show a little bit higher without it necessarily, like, he doesn't have to continue, when Steph starts to turn and almost dribble laterally, he doesn't have to keep chasing him for two more dribbles to kind of towards the sideline. And that's the part where, like, you know, it's almost like a screen pass to Draymond where he's you know, drawing the defense in, drawing him in. All right, dink it over the top, and now Draymond has just an acre of space.
Right, and, you know, it's, you know, you mentioned the guys helping from the opposite corner and the guy at the rim not necessarily making the right decision a lot of the time either. So it's not just Kevin Love that's having problems here. You know, even though he's got the vineable moments and it's very noticeable because we already know that he's a subpar defender, it's not like it's just him that is not doing the right thing here. He is, in this matchup, and I think in the Spurs matchup, a problem defensively for them, but it's not like he's the only guy that's an issue. And it's not like it makes him someone who's not a good player. Like, there are Cavs fans like, oh, we can't have Love on the team, he's terrible. Like, no, Kevin Love is really good. He just struggles with specific skills that, against the two best teams in the league, get overexposed.
Well, and they get overexposed in part not just because of who they're playing against, but kind of how they're choosing to play. The Cavs did one, I think it was almost a mistake. I wish I wanted to talk about. It was at the end of the first quarter, when I think that that, you know, to run their end of quarter play, the Warriors, you know, set a pin down for, I think it was, I think it was Barnes, but I'm not sure, who came up to set the screen on Steph for a kind of a quarter ending pick and roll. And whoever was guarding him, and Varejao, I think, thought he was switching, and the guy who was initially the defender didn't read the switch, so they both kind of ran up to cover the pick and roll. So it was almost like they were triple teaming the pick and roll, and that was actually kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think that's a bad strategy.
Yeah, well, and it's you know, just thinking about if there's a way you can coach it up. So that, and this is, you know, I think this requires a lot of awareness and communication, but having like a third guy almost pre-rotate to that spot at the free throw line where Draymond likes to catch the ball, that's actually kind of interesting. You're leaving a 3-on-2 on the back line with a guy in like the dunker spot in each corner, but especially if you manage to do it off the opposite corner. That's a long skip pass for Steph to have to make to a shooter, kind of over some length.
Well, I think the move there then would be to hit the guy that's on the strong side wing and then swing it back through Draymond, because somebody's going to have to rotate over to him, because it's, you got two guys at that point covering four Warriors if three are on Steph, or if two are on Steph and one's at the free throw line, then it's two guys covering three. And if, you know, the second guy is planted in the paint, then the pass to the wing is going to be open, and then it goes right back to Draymond in the middle.
But you've kind of got them out of that initial jailbreak situation.
Like the strategy of beating a front, where, you know, rather than throw it over the top, you hit the guy in the free throw line and then throw it over the top. It would be sort of the same idea. Rather than hitting Draymond at the free throw line, you hit the guy on the wing, then you hit Draymond, and then you get it back out to the corner. It's like one of those Spursgasm plays.
Right, make him make that play once or twice instead of just doing the same thing over and over.
No, I feel you. I hear it. And that's actually, it brings me to what I want to talk about next. You know, so many people talk about the Warriors spacing and, you know, all of the shooting that they have all over the floor. It gets overlooked how many, like, genius-level passers they have on the roster. Like, Steph is an unbelievable passer. Draymond, like you said, probably the best passing forward in the league right now. Bogut is such a good passer. Sean Livingston is an incredible passer. Iguodala is a great passer. Like, even guys like Klay and Barnes, who are, like, the sixth and seventh best passers on the team or something, are pretty good passers. I mean, the depth of ball movers that they have that are going to make the smart pass at the right time is incredible. And my thing was, I was wondering if the nerds can figure out a way to quantify all of that.
Well, I mean, I think that first of all, they are, you know, it gets overlooked perhaps in like Steph doing, you know, shaking guys down and pulling up from 27 feet all the time. But, you know, the Warriors have the only other team that's close, I think, is Atlanta, have the highest percentage of their field goals are potentially assisted. Not their made shots, even their missed shots, come via the pass. And their percentage, their effective field goal percentage on assisted shots is, I want to say, in the 60s. which is, yeah, right, exactly. And by the way, what you're describing is the reason I almost partially think that this is going to sound takey, but hear me out, that I think Kerr has gotten slightly overrated just because this was so obvious 2 years ago and was so underutilized under the previous regime that just by saying, hey, we got guys who can pass, like, it's a...
Well, I don't know. I think that Klay Thompson post-ups are underutilized.
Yeah. Okay. okay. but, so...
I don't even get it. At least I got a chuckle. I'll take it.
Yeah. Just going from, you know, 2 years ago, per the Sport View, the Warriors threw the fewest passes of any team in the league. Which is, you know, again, you talk about it, you look at their passing talent. Mind-boggling. And so going from that to a coach who's going to say, we have guys who can pass, let them pass. That in itself is not rocket surgery. So a big part of their, especially their offensive improvements, was simply kind of taking the handbrake off. And that's not, you know, that's a competent rather than a genius decision from Kerr, I'll say that. So that's why when I'm not quite ready to, you know, you talk about who are the really super positively impactful coaches. You got Pop, you got Carlisle, and everything else is, you know, shoulder shrug. You know, Curry, there was a big improvement simply by going from ridiculous misuse of personnel to appropriate use of personnel last year. But, you know, it's the credit to Kerr for doing that. But I think that, you know, 90% of the basketball watching population was like, why are you running all these ISOs when you have all these good passers?
Right. And, okay, so I'm 28 years old. You know, I've been alive since 1987. And this might be, like, I'm thinking this is probably the best passing team I've ever seen. You know, maybe it's those Kings teams with C-Webb and Divock and Jason Williams. You know, maybe it's the Spurs from a couple of years ago. But, I mean, these guys, it's one of those three teams. Like, they're very much in that conversation. And they might be the best. Like, I don't know. Would you say the same is true for the 93 years that you've been alive?
The mid-80s Celtics were a pretty good passing team for starters.
Right, I wasn't around for the best of those teams, like the 85 and 86 teams. Yeah.
I think that I would possibly take the Spurs from a couple of years ago just because almost a degree of difficulty thing. And this is where like the space for a lot of their whipping the ball around comes from just the Steph's ability to make the defense guard much more of the floor. So that's the kind of the.
So I think there could be like a differential drawn there, like, you know, the Spurs with the degree of difficulty passes, but the Warriors with just the depth of good passers that they have, because, you know, you look at that Spurs team and it's not like Danny Green is as good of a passer as Iguodala or Livingston or Patty Mills and Corey Joseph were as good a passers as those guys, or Tiago Splitter is as good a passer as Bogut, you know?
I mean, Tiago Splitter is a good passing big, and Duncan is a great passer.
Bogut is like Diaw a genius passing big.
I think, you know, Diaw is arguably the best passing big in the. I mean, I guess if we count Draymond as a big, he's not, but he's right there at least. So, but my point is more that the Spurs had to be a bit more precise, and this, if there's one fault to this Golden State team,
and they were more precise too.
Yeah, there's one fault to this Golden State team. It's they can be extravagant with their passing. Yeah.
It's part of their...
Yeah.
It's part of the way they do their thing. You know?
Yeah.
Like, the showmanshipness of it.
Well,
is,
and I'm not saying extravagant in terms of being, like show-offy. I'm just saying that like, you get some turnovers that come from, you know, trying to throw no-look lefty hook passes off the dribble.
Oh, yeah. And, right. And I'm agreeing, and I'm saying that's, like, putting on a show is part of...
Yeah.
How they run their offense. And, like, you know, that you can see it, I think, especially when they're on the road, they try to really, like, put on a show.
Yeah.
And that they were definitely on that tip last night. And I think that was, you know, partially because that's just what they do, and then partially because the Cavs took offense to a stupid comment from Curry about how...
That was a stupid comment?
No.
It was a perfectly...
No, I meant a stupid thing to take offense
yeah.
to.
Okay,
like,
yes.
He's just saying, like, he hopes that the locker room smells like champagne, and these guys are getting pissed about it. So, like, they were like, all right, sucks to be you, because we're just going to destroy you tonight and put the lie to the fact that you can defend mm-hmm. us really well.
Yeah. So, I want to move away from the offense, Golden State's offense. Because that was great. They shot like 90% from three. Yeah, that's yeah, approximately. So I think that in terms of the number they hung on Cleveland, I don't want, you know, you get into dangerous situations when you start saying lucky or whatever. But in terms of just their shot making, they were on the higher end of what even a great shooting team can expect. So. You know, the way Cleveland played defense, they were going to score a lot of points last night. If you did play that game 10 times, that's probably about as many as they would score in any one game. I want to talk about their defense.
It was actually 47.5% from three, just
okay.
to clarify
well,
for the people that thought
yes.
you were being serious about 90.
Yes, no, but that's
19
you know,
of 40, which is just pure insanity.
Yeah, now the 40 is obviously a big problem.
Right. That's, I think, more representative of how poorly the Cavs defense played than the
yeah.
fact that they made 19.
Right. But, I mean, you know, so in a normal game, they hit 15 or 16. So they put up 9
right.
or 12
It's not like
points.
They shoot much worse than 47% from three overall. They shoot, what, like 42?
Yeah. So, yeah, the point being is it, maybe it's not quite as extreme, but it's still an ass kicking because of their defense. And I don't know how many threes Cleveland ended up with last night, but they had like four attempts in the first half, if I remember correctly.
They finished 7 of 19 from three, and they had either four or five in the first half, I think.
And that was like there was a couple of plays, one right near the end of the half where. Like, LeBron penetrated on one side of the floor. Drew help, kicked to the top. You know, it's a play we see, you know, 20 times a game in the NBA. Guy penetrates, kicks to the top, swing, open shot. So the Cavs did that. The ball pinged around. I think it was Shumpert catches the ball in the corner with Iguodala already closed out right in his lap. And that was just kind of emblematic of their defense. It's like everyone is on a string, already where
it
know,
happened
one
to
pass ahead
JR
of the play.
A couple times too before he got tossed, and he wound up with actually zero threes attempted, which
yeah.
I can't remember the last time JR didn't take a three.
Yeah, and by the way, that was a ridiculous flagrant two call. Can we agree with that?
Yeah,
like,
we talked about it on G Chat. It was a reputation toss. Like if
yeah,
that wasn't
like,
JR Smith, he doesn't get tossed. Radio Ethan brought it up on Twitter, how there's like this list of all these plays where JR has like intentionally run dudes over or elbowed dudes on plays where, you know, it's not a real basketball play. And Kenny Maurer, he thinks, was aware of that And I wouldn't be surprised if that were true.
But, I mean, was there anything on that play that wasn't a real basketball play? He's trying to run, like he's running hard through a screen, which, all right.
Yeah, sure, but, you know, usually when you run hard through a screen, you don't, like, lower your shoulder and truck stick the dude. Like, I get it. I wouldn't have thought it would be certainly not a flagrant two, like maybe a flagrant one, but, you know, he's J.R. Smith, so.
Like, and there was a play later in that quarter where, like, Shumpert took a guy out of the air, which is a far worse play
I think C-Web said something about it. He's like, that should be a flagrant. Shumpert knocked the guy out of the air, but it didn't look bad.
That looked terrible. I mean, he almost clotheslined the guy, and I'm tired, we're getting our ass whooped. I'm going to reach out and grab this guy. Oh, no.
Yeah,
kind of play rather than an intentionally dirty play. But my point is, there's a far worse, quote unquote, not a basketball play than anything JR did. And I was annoyed by that because it's a reputation thing. And he didn't, like, okay, fine, he's got a reputation, but that doesn't mean it should be self-fulfilling that when, you know.
No, I feel
that,
you.
That now J.R. Smith is unreliable because he got tossed out unjustifiably. Like, that's on him.
Well,
anyway,
he's not unreliable because he got tossed.
Right.
Like, he got tossed because he's unreliable.
Which is ass backwards.
Sure, but that's J.R. Smith for you.
Yeah. That's a fair point.
Go back to the defense, though, because you were talking about that and I hijacked it a little bit.
No, it's just, you know, that and part of that is Cleveland's offensive balance was just not right for a lot of last night. I think Golden State only had 5 steals in the first half. It felt like a lot more than that, just the number of times that, like, something would happen on Cleveland's offense, they'd be discombobulated, and then all of a sudden it's a 3-on-1 the other way.
It also seemed like Cleveland would have to, you know, usually when your passing is on point, it hits the guy and then you can ping it around. There were a couple times where a pass would come, like, over the top, and then a guy would have to move a step and a half to go catch the pass and then look to make the next move. Like, that throws you off balance so much.
Yeah. So they were really kind of struggling to kind of create, you know, even that initial crease in the defense. I think that we saw some more of kind of the LeBron not being the physical force he once was last night. He got blocked at the rim once and kind of ended up kicking the ball out on a few times when he, you know, in your mind's eye, you see him just barreling through people and finishing. So to continue with that kind of narrative we've been watching over the season, saw some of that, but basically they just weren't, their execution was just not sharp. And none of their bigs, whether it was Mozgov or Love or Tristan Thompson, have really found a way to be effective. And not exactly sure why that is, but just they just were sub, just not executing much of anything for much of the game. And I think that was a much bigger problem than the defense, because, I mean, the defensive foibles kind of come from all these empty offensive possessions. And if they're going to beat Golden State, they're going to have to score. And that's, you know, it's a tautology, right? But
yep. It's all connected. As our man Lester Freeman would say, all the pieces matter.
Yeah.
This was an ass-kicking through and through.
Yes.
Do you you have any more on this game, or do you want to move on to a little bit of Clips Rockets?
The last point is something I think we've talked about before, is how Cleveland is getting killed today, and rightly so, because they got their butts whooped. But in general, the whole construction of their team is being like, oh, they're a flawed team, aging core, limited, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, that's so much more a reaction to just how good Golden State and San Antonio are. Like, Cleveland's going to win high 50s, waltz their way to the finals.
Yeah,
that's the resume of a championship contender.
And they're going to finish in the top 10 probably seasons. On both sides of the floor, which is, you know, the true mark of a contender. I mean,
yeah,
they're clearly the best team in their conference, so they're fine.
And they're just mostly. Yeah, well, it's not they're fine because they have, you know,
yeah, they have real issues, you know. But you know, in general, in terms of the hierarchy of the league, like, they're fine, and they have issues with the teams that are probably going to play in the finals. You know, it happens.
Yeah, and not just and the team, those two teams happen to be, you know, historically
right.
You know,
I said this last week. We've had one team ever win 70 plus games, and there are two on pace to do it right now. And it's these two teams that they can't find a way to guard or to score against. Like, there's no shame in not being able to beat, like, two of possibly the three best teams, or whatever you want to call it. Two of, like, the, even if you want to say, like, the 10 or 15 best teams ever. Like, that's in the top half of 1% teams of all time.
Right. And that's the point I'm trying to make, is that, you know, this Cavs team in 80% of NBA seasons would be, you know, at least would be, you know, perfectly well positioned to give themselves a great chance at winning a championship. And it's kind of their bad luck, to use a dirty word when talking about Golden State again, that they're just, you know, that this season these two other teams are at that level. And to be completely fair to Cleveland, I mean, there are some possibilities. Like, Kyrie is not 100% yet. Mozgov is not 100% yet. Who knows if Mozgov will be right all year?
The thing about that is, when you're talking, everyone's always like, oh, if the Cavs are fully healthy, like, why are we ever assuming they're going to be fully healthy at this point? They have a bunch of guys who get hurt all the time. At this point, you can't assume that they're ever going to be fully healthy.
And the two guys who, when they get right, are guys coming back from knee surgery, and knee surgeries take time. You know, so maybe they'll be closer to right next year, which unfortunately means LeBron is a year older, and who knows what that looks like.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. So a little bit of Clips Rockets here.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You talked last week, I think, about how, you know, Clippers games sometimes fail to hold your attention, and I think I figured it out. What it's, you know, we're both to some degrees baseball fans, and it's like a Yankees Red Sox game, not even a Yankees Red Sox playoff game, just because it's so, everything with the Clippers is so drama that it just seems like every part of the game in real time, and it's just kind of like,
your audio dropped out a little bit there. You want to run through that again?
Yeah. So every aspect of the game takes a little bit longer than it should, just because there's so much drama, right? Everything about the Clippers is drama and pained expressions and pointed fingers and stuff like that. And so we get used to the rhythm and the pace of an NBA game. And it's just that little bit slower that makes it just seem glacial. And then that's even before getting into, like, the DeAndre Jordan and Dwight Howard shooting free throws thing, which, of course, you know, grind any game to a halt. Because in addition to being bad free throw shooters, they both take forever on the line.
Yeah, Dwight takes longer than, like, anybody ever.
Yeah.
Don't you have 10 or 12 seconds, or whatever it is?
Yeah.
I feel like he violates that pretty consistently.
Opposing fans used to count at Alonzo Mourning, and I'm surprised no one has really started to do that with Dwight. Maybe the worry is if you speed him up, he'll shoot better. Just the other part of this game is, it's just like, you know, Clippers late game collapse. Who's ever seen that coming?
Somebody said on Twitter during the game, like, last year's Game 6 was a long con by the Clippers to get you to watch every minute of all of their games. I thought that was funny.
Yeah. The other big strategic point is just that, interesting to note that Clippers' best defender, Austin Rivers, was the guy who got burned twice on the two tying Marcus, you know, the two late threes by Marcus Thornton, which sent the game into overtime.
It's almost like, you know, he's not their best defender.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah. DeAndre Jordan is, because he's Bill Russell.
Okay.
Do we want to talk a little bit of J.J. Redick?
Yes.
He's now up to
50.2% on three, I believe.
Exactly 50, according to the ESPN page. He's at 16.6 points a game, shooting 5.6 threes a game, 49% from the field, 50% from three. I mean, the guy is just having an incredible season, career highs across the board. And even, you know, he's playing three fewer minutes a game than last year, still scoring more because he's shooting so well. And last year was actually his career high from three. He shot 44%. He's playing great. It's awesome to watch. I love it.
So if he was in the Eastern Conference, he'd be an all-star this year.
Yeah, I mean, the Eastern Conference guards kind of suck. Yeah. You know what? That's a good transition.
Thank you. That was that. Yeah. Okay.
Let's talk a little bit of all-star. Eastern Conference, in the last voting returns, the leaders were at guard was Dwayne Wade and Kyrie Irving, and in the front court was LeBron, Paul George, and Carmelo Anthony had moved ahead of Andre Drummond. I think we can both agree that the starters at the guard spots in those last returns should not be the starters at the guard spots. One of them, I think, should definitely not be on the team. The other one, you know, you can make an argument either way, but I think I'd probably still have him on there.
Wade, I think, I'm assuming you're talking about Wade, is maybe should he be on there, should he not?
Yeah, I think he's up in the air. Just because the guard crop has been so bad.
He's in, so for my last spot, I was kind of, had I a ballot, which of course I don't, because it's not voted on by the media, and not that I would have a ballot, even if it was. I have Isaiah Thomas over Reggie Jackson and Dwayne Wade for that last spot, and it's pretty close. And I, you know, if you wanted to argue that Wade has been the best of those three, or he's more of an all-star or whatever, I'm not going to disagree, you know, that heartily with you. The front court, you know, I'm fine with. Carmelo has been really good this year. It's been one of the, like,
although,
like,
Carmelo's been really good the last 20 games or so.
Yeah.
Early on, he was not nearly as good.
Yeah, you're probably right, but on balance, it's been a pretty good Carmelo season.
Yes, and like, he would be a deserving all-star and, you know, a pretty deserving starter as well. There are some guys you could take over him. You could take Drummond. You could take Paul Millsap,
yeah. If it was me, I would, like, just in terms of who is most worthy of starting, I would probably take Millsap, but I'm not going to – he's kind of so publicly anonymous that it's nice that you think that, but it'll never happen.
Right. Kind of like thing. He's 15th in the most recent returns of voting. Joakim Noah had 5,000 more votes than him.
Yeah.
Hassan Whiteside.
Paul Millsap is
had
so good.
10 times as many votes as him.
Yeah. I got in a little kerfluffle on Twitter yesterday by saying that I think Paul Millsap is the most underrated player in the NBA. Just because, you know, the people came back at me with Kawhi, which I think actually makes, you know, it makes some sense, because I don't think people realize that Kawhi has possibly been the second best player in the league this year. But at the same time, I mean, he's finals MVP. Everyone's talking about how good Kawhi is now. Whereas if you said, you know, Paul Millsap, he's a top 15-ish player in the league. Like, how many people would be like, what?
Yeah, people would look at you like you had eight heads.
Yeah. So, he obviously, in addition to those three front court, he's obviously in, if it's me. I think also Al Horford, kind of for similar, just really good in kind of big and little ways.
Yeah, I feel like they might get screwed by the fact that the Hawks aren't a 60-win juggernaut this year. And people are going to be like, oh my God, I can't believe we put four Hawks on the All-Star team last year. Like,
well, why were these guys Teague there? And Korver aren't going to be anywhere near it this year. So no. I think they're still deserving of having those two guys.
I think they're absolutely deserving, those two guys. The coach's vote might get a little wonky because neither one of them is going to be a starter.
Yeah.
At the guard spots, who would you go with at those two? I think we could both agree that Wade and Irving should not be the starters. You know, it's possible Kyle Lowry could pass Kyrie Irving.
He was 32,000 votes behind. Butler Lowry would be my two picks for those two spots.
Same. Butler Lowry. I mean, you could make an argument for John Wall at one of the two spots, but I think that his slow start probably knocks him out because those guys have been better consistently on the whole of the season.
Yeah, that and also just the kind of the team success tiebreaker.
Yeah, I'm not into that. Like, I feel like if you've been good, you've been good. It's an individual.
No, but I mean, if you know, you look at the individual resume, it's close. It's arguable, though. I think that Lowry has been better. I mean, even on that front. But even if it's close, you kind of say, all right. One, just to make it easy, like, all right, it's close. One guy's team has been much better than the other guy's team. With that, rather than kind of, you know, parsing, you know, decimal points of PER or whatever, let's just go with the guy who is.
That's fair.
And it's not. And
I would go, know, honestly, like, if I was making the tiebreaker, I would just be like, who's more fun to watch? Because it's the All-Star game and I don't care.
Yeah. Well,
but I do care.
Yeah.
If both guys are going to be in anyway, then I want to watch the more fun guy.
Nick Young, All-Star. No, I don't think Nick Young is fun to watch.
if you do, you're weird.
Wall would be on my absolutely. Roster too. So.
So I guess your five to start, I guess you said, would be LeBron, George, Millsap, and then Lowry and Butler. I would have, I think, LeBron, George, and maybe Drummond.
He's fallen off a little bit recently. I think that actually, if it was just straight up picking, I'd have LeBron, Millsap, Drummond.
George has fallen off a little bit recently too. You know, he got off to the ridiculous start. So there's then at that point there comes seven subs. You know, we both said, Carmelo would be on it. Drummond / Millsap for the two of us would be on it. Horford would be on it. John Wall would be on it. Who else do you got on there? Like, I think DeRozan should be in.
Yeah, I've got DeRozan.
Chris Bosh.
Chris Bosh, yep.
Definitely. I think that brings us to 10 or 11.
I think that leaves us with one more spot, and that's where it's kind of like the Isaiah,
Reggie Jackson, Dwayne Wade, Kemba Walker.
He's been good.
Look, just give it to Porzingis, all right? Give it to Porzingis. I said this on a podcast yesterday. I don't want him to make it because I don't want people to complain that he's not deserving and turn against him. And because I want him to feel like he's snubbed, even if he wasn't, and use it as motivation.
Yeah. There have been worse selections.
One in the Western Conference where the leading vote getter among the front court players over the next guy is Kobe Bryant. And the fans want to see Kobe. I want to see Kobe too. But, I mean, the dude shouldn't be in the All-Star game. Because he's not very good anymore. But I think that it's pretty clear he's going to make it. It's basically impossible for him not to. The other two front court spots, you know, the close matchup is between Draymond and Kawhi for that third starter spot in the front court because Kevin Durant's going to start as well. In the most recent returns, Draymond was ahead of Kawhi by about 12,000 votes. Who you got?
I would go Kawhi and Draymond.
Over KD, you mean?
Yeah, and that's a cop out because KD has had missed a couple games, and and actually before he missed a couple games, he kind of he stuttered a little bit to start the season and has been lights out since then. But and also it's like it's you look at the resumes, it's close, and then we're gonna go with the guys from the transcendent teams here. Again, over the team that in most years would be right there. Oklahoma City is kind of is similar spot to Cleveland in that regard. But I would go and no disrespect to KD intended. I think Draymond Green and Kawhi Leonard have just been that good.
And neither one of them has a chance to start over KD, though. I think picking between the two, probably go with Kawhi. I think, like you said, he might be on balance the second best player in the league so far this year. Certainly in the top five. I think he's been a little bit better than Draymond, considering the totality of what he does on both ends. And, that's not taking anything away from Draymond either, who I think has probably been a top 10 guy this year. But, you got to make a pick at some point. In the backcourt, Steph and Russ are going to be the starters. I think we would both
No problems
agree.
there.
Absolutely, very well deserving. The two best guards probably in the league this year.
Hey, and Russ gets to play shooting guard, which is great, because he's not a. No, I'm not even gonna.
Yeah, we're not doing that.
No.
So I would say that. So that's six guys guaranteed to make the team, because whichever of Draymond or Kawhi doesn't get voted in.
Can we, if we're talking about who our all-stars would be, can we just kind of remove Kobe from the equation and recognize that we have seven spots still to pick, or do we want to do the thing
That's
where
exactly where
the
I was
West gets
going to.
11 spots this year because the legacy spot to Kobe, which, by the way, it's not,
Look, I
I
don't
don't
really
it's
have a
not it's not
problem.
illegitimate, it's not how I would prefer to see it.
Oh God. I mean, I wouldn't like I love to watch. I'm sure it'll be great to watch him. The For some reason he'll play like 38 minutes and take every shot, and it'll be dumb because like I'd much rather watch Steph and Russ shoot.
Byron's coaching?
Yeah, Byron's coaching. Byron with Tibbs as his assistant, so he's playing everybody 40 minutes. But yeah, I mean, look. The fans want to see him, and the fans get to vote. And right now, I don't like it, but I'm sure when it's actually happening, it'll be fun, especially if he actually gets hot, which, I mean, probably not. But, it happens. Let's talk about who else we'd have on there, though.
I mean, Chris Paul obviously is
Chris
there.
Paul, absolutely, 1,000%.
I
At
think
one of
I
the
think
guard spots.
Aldridge, deserves to be there. I think
Aldridge over Tim, or both Aldridge and Tim?
Aldridge over Tim. Tim Duncan is averaging single-digit scoring this year.
Yeah, but he might be like the best defensive big man in the league right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's. Yeah, he might be. That's a fair point.
And
I don't
so
know.
much of what LaMarcus is able to do is because of Tim and vice versa. It's tough,
That
but
which I mean, honestly, which of the which who of the Spurs should get at least two, and who the second one should be, is actually
Tony
I
Parker has a really deserving case.
Yeah, no, I was gonna bring Tony Parker up too.
Yeah,
On
the
balance,
West
for
is
me, I think
so
Aldridge
old.
has been the best of the three, but that's
I think big men, I'd have Anthony Davis in there. I'd have DeMarcus Cousins in there. I think I would have Dirk in there.
And now you're okay. So now we're already at with that. We're already at 10 guys, not counting Kobe. So you have two spots left.
James Harden. Would you not have him in there?
So I was discussing with someone. A prominent writer asked me for my all-star opinions, and we were semi-joking, going back and forth about, you know what? Maybe I should just leave off Harden, Cousins, and Davis, and instead give those spots to like Klay and Duncan
The thing about those guys is, you know, they've been, I would say, relative to expectations, disappointing. But that doesn't mean they still haven't been, you know, the best guys at their positions. You
know? I know. Like,
James Harden has probably been, on balance, the best two guard in the league this year.
I would say Jimmy Butler.
In the West this year. Like, yeah. I think he's been on balance better than Klay Thompson, who started off the season cold as well.
Yeah, that says almost as much about like the state of the two guard position in the West as it does about James Harden.
Do you not think he's been one of the four or five best guards in the West? I do.
Yeah. It's tempting just for take reasons to want to pull the trigger on that.
Right. And Boogie has absolutely been one of the best big men in the West.
I mean, Boogie should be, if season ended today, he would be my first team All-NBA center. So it's...
Mine would be Draymond.
Draymond has been the best center when he's played center, but he's played like 16% of his minutes at center, so it's a little bit of a fudge.
Yeah, but sometimes you got to fudge in all NBA teams. Yeah. They made Paul George a forward when he was clearly playing two a few years ago.
No, they made him a two when he was playing.
Oh, yeah, the other way around, sorry.
Yeah. What about Blake?
Yeah, I think Blake absolutely was deserving at the time he went out.
Yeah, he was, you know, playing at a top five at least level.
Absolutely.
I think he
might be one of those guys where he gets voted in by the coaches and then he's like, I'm not going to play because I'm hurt, and then they bring somebody else in.
Well, he'll be back by then. I mean, he was supposed to be out, 2 weeks, and it's been about, 2 to 4 weeks.
Well, it was supposed to be reevaluated.
Yeah, you're right.
After that time, so you never know.
Yeah. Damian Lillard.
Yeah. Has Lillard been better than Harden, Parker, and or Clay?
Over the course of the season, I think he's probably been better than Clay, and just in terms of like workload, he's just so surpasses what you know, the fact that Portland is there or thereabouts for a playoff spot, even though the eighth spot in the West, what it comes down to is
Kobe's going to screw one of these guys out of a spot.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know, somebody like Dirk or Lillard or Parker or Clay. I mean, Clay's going to make it, I think. But Dirk or Boogie or Lillard or Parker or one of these guys is going to get jobbed out of a spot, or Aldridge or Duncan, because Kobe's on the team. And it is what it is, honestly.
Yeah. So I'm just looking up my list. I'm trying to remember who I actually selected in my hypothetical list.
Who do you get for the West guard spots or forward spots or what?
Just in general. Who
I'm looking at the returns right now. How the hell is Enes Kanter 10th on the list? Did everybody in Turkey vote for him?
Oh my goodness. No. I think so Steph, Draymond, Clay, KD, Russ, Chris Paul.
You had Aldridge.
I had Aldridge. I had Cousins. I had the Brow. I had Harden.
You did have Harden.
Yeah. I wasn't able to pull the trigger on I was trying to talk someone else into doing it. But
you're so not takey, man. Like, why don't you need to get takeier?
Yeah, Lillard and Griffin were my 12. Like that those last two spots are a nightmare, because if you're gonna say Clay, if you're gonna say Tony Parker, I'm not going to, you know, pitch a fit or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, you can't have an All-Star game without Dirk. He's the fifth.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah, I mean, you're going to say Dirk. I'm not going to.
He's the fifth Splash Brother. Remember last year?
Yeah.
The West is really tough. It's much tougher than the East.
Yeah, and part of the reason I kind of went away from Duncan and Dirk is trying to think of how much those guys actually would, you know, want to.
Yeah, Tim Duncan would definitely rather be in the Virgin Islands.
Yeah, you know, Dirk might. Dirk seems like he's having enough fun this year that you know, running it back one more time.
If you're going to bring Dirk, then you got to bring Zaza, because they're like the running roadshow right now.
Yeah. Zaza's so great.
Those guys are terrific. It's so much fun. Yeah. Seth,
I have a theory about Zaza, by the way.
Yeah, go ahead, man.
I think his athleticism is not like super athletic, but he's actually pretty mobile. And his athleticism is underrated because of his face. And that's my hot Zaza take.
Interesting. I wrote about the Bucks that should be going up today, tomorrow, whenever. And the thing I said about Zaza was that he's always in the right place at the right time. And that's a hugely underrated skill. And it's been very important for the Mavs, and it's been very bad for the Bucks not to have it.
Well, there you go.
Zaza, man. Got to end the All-Star podcast with Zaza. Seth, good stuff, man. We'll be back on Friday with our usual podcast on Thursday night TNT games. Guess what? We're going to be talking about the Cavs again. We're going to be talking about, I think, the Spurs again. It's, Cavs-Clippers on Thursday. And the Spurs against the Suns. So we'll probably have one good game and one blowout as usual.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The level of drama for Cavs Clippers.
Oh, God, it's going to be terrific. Or terrifically terrible, I guess, I would say. Good stuff, man. We'll be back. Check out all the HP Basketball Network podcasts on hardwoodparoxysm.com. Or by searching for HP Basketball Network or Quo Vadimus on iTunes. And, you know, we've heard your complaints about the HP Network feed. We will have that up within a couple days. Hopefully, that's the plan. I've been working on it for a couple weeks since it went down. You can follow Seth on Twitter at Seth Partnow. You can follow me at JADubin5. And like I said, we'll be back on Friday. Seth, thanks a lot, man.